Welcome to our discussion of real estate and real estate investment trusts. Real estate is a bona fide, which is a fancy way of saying an authentic, a genuine alternative when investing. But I like to say that real estate is tricky, which is a euphemism for real estate is a real pain in the... Remember the PETA factor? I don't know if you remember the PETA factor way back when we discussed mutual funds. Pain in the... right, exactly. Mutual funds are easy once you've chosen your particular fund or funds. Nothing for you to do. Just make sure the $50, $100 or more gets in your checking account or taken out of your paycheck. Real estate? No. The PETA factor is sky high from having to deal with the buildings themselves and having to deal with the tenants therein. So let's get started. But first, as we've said in the past, it's very difficult to teach real estate from a book or a classroom, or it's kind of like trying to teach people how to swim without having them jump in the water, or drive without having them get behind the wheel of a car. So what I'm going to say probably two or three times is throughout this presentation is that if you really are interested in real estate, try getting a job in the industry, appraiser, property manager, escrow agent, whatever, just so that you can understand the ins and outs of the industry, because it's vast, and it's often stated that real estate has created more millionaires in the United States than any other form of investment. That's probably true. I don't know. But it is not without its, slings and arrows. Every investment has advantages. Every investment has disadvantages. So we're going to do our best to keep you grounded and not throw pie in the sky numbers. Oh, you're going to get rich with no money down. Right. Slide number two. There are two types of real estate investments. There are direct and indirect. With direct investment, real estate investments, you are the owner. You hold title to the property. And there are various types of direct real estate investments. Your home is an investment. Now, in my humble opinion, it's a home first, an investment second. There are other people who believe otherwise. So when people say, well, why are you investing just in stock? Shouldn't we invest in real estate also? I say, well, most people are going to aspire to own their own home. So you'll have some real estate investments. And the cool thing about a home is that you can live in it, whereas you can't really live in your mutual fund. But as we'll state, it's a home first, an investment second. A vacation home has various advantages and disadvantages. Depending on how it's treated by the IRS, you have to, I think, be there at least 2 weeks a year or something. I don't know all the ins and outs. Rental property is a whole course unto itself, folks. It's a whole course. But again, it's more easily taught by being inside the industry than just reading it from a book or taking a $10,000 5-day seminar on how to make money from nothing. The most lucrative type of real estate investment is undeveloped land. It's also the riskiest. There's a saying, don't invest in dirt. This is not something you'd want to take on first. You'd want to be in the industry and have had a few other cash generating real estate investments before you took on undeveloped land. As we said, can give you tremendous gains, but this type of investment poses enormous risks. All the money is riding on a single parcel of land, plus there's no cash flow, and you still have to pay the property taxes. So you'll see these properties that are being sold for the tax lien out in Hacumba or Boulevard. Where are they? And somebody stopped paying the property taxes, and this county is finally getting rid of the property. So you buy it, and you think you're going to get rich, and develop the land, and it turns out it's economically not viable. And so you stop paying the property tax. Yeah. And there's no guarantee that you're going to be able to develop the land, either economically or, you know, zoning-wise. So stay away from undeveloped land until you are a seasoned real estate investor. Indirect investments are a whole lot easier. We'll discuss in detail real estate investment trusts because these are, for us, very similar to a stock. In fact, they look just like a stock. Now, they're not stocks, even though they trade like stocks and they look, we can measure them similarly to stocks. They are trusts, and trusts are tricky, but you could think of them as mutual funds with real estate instead of mutual funds with stocks and bonds. There are other types of, and we'll discuss those in detail more later. There are other types, syndicates and partnerships. Well, here is where you start to discuss the difference between passive and active income. And again, these are IRS aspects, tax aspects. And these syndicates and partnerships were really hurt, 40 years ago by the tax reform bill in 1986. Once you've started generating tremendous income from your investments or from your business or from your income, you may be interested in tax credits. These are investments that really may or may not make sense as an investment standpoint, but they would help tremendously to reduce your tax burden. And they are typically, well-meaning, and sometimes they do indeed do what they are supposed to do, projects such as low-income housing. Now, equity sharing is a very interesting alternative. And it doesn't have to be familial, but it often is. The grandparents, the parents have some money to invest, and the young couple just starting out or a single person is looking to buy a condo or maybe a house in San Diego. So the grandparents, the parents come up with the down payment, and the young couple lives in the house and makes the payments and keeps it up. And then after 10 years or so, maybe sooner or maybe later, the couple is ready to move or ready to buy out their parents or grandparents. And what happens is you share in the appreciation. So the condo may have gone from $400,000 to $500,000. So the parents or grandparents would be able to share, usually 50-50, but it doesn't have to be. It's negotiable. So they would get $50,000 on top of whatever down payment they paid in. And the couple would either refinance or maybe buy a new home or whatever and pay off their parents or grandparents. Again, it doesn't have to be familiar. It could be a business relationship with just investors. But if you embark upon this, talk to a qualified, competent, get a referral, a real estate lawyer who will draw up all the documents because you are playing with tremendous sums of money, folks. And then another way to invest in real estate is by being the bank, being the credit union, the mortgage company. These are called hard money loans. You are not the loaner. You're not the owner. You're the loaner. You're playing the part of the mortgage company. Now, don't you just love that term, hard money? These are people who can't get a loan for whatever reason from the bank or the credit union. So you, as the credit union, the bank, are going to charge sky-high interest rates. And so what do we know about the bigger the return, the bigger the risk? And so I was typically very, very skeptical of these people. But there's this one company here in San Diego, FHL Corp, and a friend of mine who knows I'm involved with this said, would you come with me to the presentation on this company? Because he wanted to do some investing. And so I said, okay. And I went there, and the woman was quite I was impressed. And then she discussed all the different aspects of the loan. Typically 3 years, no more than 3 years. Always the first position, never the second position. The second position is like the home equity line of credit. And they don't look at your credit score. They just look at the property and make sure that they are no more than 70% loan to value. They don't issue a loan more than worth of the 70% of the property. So after she had given her presentation, I said, okay, what's your default rate? And she said, what? I said, how many loans are in trouble? She goes, well, we got about 200, a little over 200, and two are in trouble, and two are, they're okay. I think they're going to pull through. And I said, that's 2%. Well, 1% in, you know, basically default, but 2% in trouble. That's pretty darn good, you know. Considering the rates of return that people were getting, so I asked her if she would come speak to our investment club, and she has twice. She's very sharp. Check her out on the investment club archive what's her name? Joanne Ortega? Joanne Ortega? Yeah. So I was impressed. I was very impressed with them. So be careful though. Be careful. It's a very risky proposition, but you're getting rewarded quite handsomely. So many investors start with a residential property for rental property, a condo, a house, a duplex. Commercial property, forget it, folks, not in San Diego. No, you think the price of residential houses has gone up? Wait till you see the price for commercial property. It's just insane. What I want, if I'm going to invest in real estate, is what's called positive cash flow, meaning that the rent covers the mortgage and the insurance and the taxes and the maintenance. And don't be surprised if you're looking at negative cash flow for several years. The rule of thumb is you want a property to be producing 7 to 10 times annual rent. That's Yeah. Starting throughout the 1980s and into the 2000s, real estate had never produced 7 to 10 times annual rent. Negative cash flow. Well, when 2008 and 2009 hit, and we're going to take a look at an example, we saw this situation turn around, and you could. If you could get the banks to talk to you because of the thousands of foreclosures and they were just so overwhelmed, you could find property that was producing 7 to 10 times annual rent. Not anymore. No. But who knows? We may see that situation come back. Who knows? If you are so inclined, I think the South Bay are where the bargains are, but there are no bargains now. 6 months, a year, 2 years, there may be. We'll see. Concentrate on smaller fixer-uppers first. 2 to 4 units. Live in one of them. Rent out the others. Look for low down payments, and seller financing of rundown properties. Now, why is this? Because banks usually don't want to loan to a distressed property. The property is in, you know, terrible state. Their appraiser says this place needs to be gutted. They don't want to touch it. But the seller wants to sell, so they might take the place of the bank, and you pay them a down payment, and then you start making them payments because it might be time for them to retire. They don't want to deal with the properties anymore. They want the cash flow. And banks are normally all too happy to finance a rundown foreclosure on their books, so they might treat you more generously if it's their property because the seller, whatever, let the house go into distress, and now they've been foreclosed upon. But San Diego is a tremendous exception to this rule. Why? Because you are up against the best real estate investors in the world, in my humble opinion. There are just people here who are just absolute sharks. And now they've attracted these properties in San Diego, have attracted private equity companies with tons of backing, tons of money, and they're buying these places for cash. So it's just very difficult here. Other parts of the country, no. You could, well, maybe not, you know, San Francisco, LA, and New York, and these Washington, D.C., these areas that where real estate is just Chicago so expensive. But other parts of the country, yes, this is good advice in my humble opinion. Now, when you're the property owner, my advice is to avoid property managers. Not that there aren't good property managers, folks, but nobody cares about your property as much as you do. My advice is to find people, you know, good electrician, good plumber, good carpenter and the like, who you can count on and you know, pay them well, because the property managers often, you know, they just take 10% of the rent, and sometimes they do a good job, sometimes they don't. So that's been my experience, but everyone is different. But getting a job at a property management firm, that's not a bad deal in my humble opinion, because you're going to learn the ropes. Now, do a good job. Treat that property as if it were yours, because someday, hopefully it might be, you'll have property on your own, and you'll know what to do in case of problems. Most importantly, when you're a rental investor, rental and property investor, are you savvy dealing with repairs, and are you savvy dealing with renters? Fixing a tenant is just as important as fixing a toilet, because one bad tenant will set you back thousands of dollars. It is insane what they can do. People, it's not their property. They don't treat it very well. Landlords love to swap horror stories. And we have a picture, I think, in the financial planning and money match. I should move it over to introduction investments, of somebody who had been working on their motorcycle in the living room. Yeah, and I thought, well, that one took the cake. Until one of the students in the financial planning and money management class said, well, I'm from Texas, and my parents owned a house that they rented out to two gentlemen, roommates. The one roommate killed the other roommate and then started a fire to try to hide the murder. He didn't realize that a house fire doesn't get anywhere near as hot as it needs to be to incinerate a body. So I thought, okay, I don't know. I think that one is the worst that I've ever heard of. Make improvements that add perceived value. And this guy, just read anything by him. First of all, I want a disclaimer here. I am horrible when it comes to fixing things. I'm better to stay away from it. I don't help, I hurt. So we have very good people who we count on. But if you're so inclined, read this guy's, because he's a lot of fun. He says, install a white picket fence. People love a white picket fence. I don't know why. And then he, when he had a house that was settling, the foundation was, you know, sinking a little bit and the house was tilted. What he did is when he replaced the windows and doors, he tilted the windows and doors so it looked like the house was straight. No, it's nothing new. They did the same thing on the Leaning Tower of Pisa. Look at the top. You'll see that the Italian engineers were trying to compensate for the fact that it was leaning. So read anything by Mr. J.P. DeSima. What are some of the advantages of real estate? Well, it's a hedge against inflation. Real estate tends to follow inflation fairly closely. Sometimes in the case of San Diego, even does a hell of a lot better than inflation. And we're going to discuss, and we already discussed in detail, financial leverage. This is the use of borrowed funds for investment purposes that allows you to acquire a more expensive property than you could on your own. And if you remember way back when we did our overview of the investment universe, we talked about real estate returning about 7 or 8%, where stocks have done 8, 9, 10, more, 11%. And the real estate investors were jumping up and down saying, but he's not comparing apples to apples. And I apologize. I said, they're absolutely right. And the reason is because of the way we purchase real estate as opposed to the way we purchase stock. And we learned about buying on margin, right? So you're going to see financial leverage in action in just a bit. Now, for the partnerships, the REITs, it's just so much easier to get in and get out. Real estate is not a liquid investment, right? But REITs, you buy them and sell them like a stock. So no big deal. Partnerships, sometimes it's easy to get in. Maybe it's not so easy to find somebody to buy your piece of the partnership. and you don't have to worry about managing the property. It used to be that one of the greatest parts, remember, there's an intellectual part of investing and there's an emotional part of investing. One of the best parts of real estate is you couldn't check your prices on the internet every day like you could with stocks every 5 minutes. But now with Zillow and Trulia, you can and people do. And I think this is a really bad idea because it'll just drive you crazy. And besides, real estate, as we said, is not liquid. The house doesn't buy and sell every day, whereas you can pretty much trust this to the price of the stock when you go online to buy or sell it. You don't know what's going to happen to that price of the house when you try to sell it or go to buy it. So, don't track your prices of your real estate often. Now, what are the disadvantages? Real estate is the poster child for poor liquidity. It may be hard to sell your property or your share of the property if it's a partnership, but that's not a problem with REITs. There are times, it used to be in the run-up of the 2000s, and then just recently, you put the for sale sign up on Thursday. By Saturday, you've gotten 5 or more, sometimes 45 offers. And by Sunday, you've written the sales agreement. Now, the property doesn't close for several weeks. But still, that's unusual, and that's usually a sign of a bubble, a mania. Then there are times when property usually takes 3 to 4 months to sell, go through the process of selling in escrow. And then there are times when it takes 9 months, a year and a half, and then you go through foreclosure. So it's a cycle. Normally, there is a lack of diversification when we buy real estate, but partnerships and REITs give us real diversification. And we talked about the tax consequences, which we won't go into detail, but the IRS, well, it's not the IRS, it's just implementing the rules from the Congress. They separate passive tax shelters with active income. And so if you have a passive loss, you have to write it against passive gains. You can't write it against active gains. And talk to your accounting instructor. And then the management and tenant problems. We talked about the PETA factor. And people would say property values never decline. Oh, yes, they can. And yes, they do. And we're probably looking at a decline soon as interest rates rise and we see if we can engineer, the Federal Reserve Bank can engineer a soft landing. We don't want to use the R word, the recession. There was one Federal Reserve chairman, or I think he was maybe not a chairman, he was the economic advisor to the president. This was many years ago. He didn't want to use recession, so he called it a banana. If a banana happens. So let's take a look at your home as an investment, which is, for many people, the major asset. It's typically a good hedge against inflation. A home typically produces an after-inflation return of about 2.5%. San Diego, no. It's been all a lot more than that. And there are various tax advantages. In the financial planning and money management, we learn about Schedule A in the home mortgage deduction. And the major tax advantage is if you're the kind of person who is savvy with fixing up a house, you could buy a house, live in it for 2 years, and then if you're single, sell it with $250,000 of capital gains tax-free. And if you're married, $500,000 of capital gains tax-free. What? That means, say you bought the house for $200,000 and you're a married couple. And now you could sell the house for $700,000. That would be a $500,000 capital gain and not pay any taxes. And there are some people who do that. You know, some people, especially not so much San Diego because it's just very difficult. But around the country, you find a fixer-upper, live in it for 2 years. Usually they have another job, right? But they're savvy with plumbing and hanging drywall and electrical. Be careful. And then they sell it after 2 years and not pay any taxes on the capital gains. Very cool. But in my humble opinion, it is a home first and investment second. And as we said, you're going to hear, usually real estate agents, a different version. Oh, no, 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 no. You're going to buy here and in 3 years it's going to go up and you're going to sell that place and then buy over here because that place is going to, that area is going to go up because they want you to buy and sell because that's how they make their money. Yeah, I don't want to buy and sell houses. I want to live in a house. But this is what you'll hear when you get on a topic with people about investments, and they'll, you know, they find they, you know, you're an stock and big, oh, big deal, you know, you're a stockbroker. But my house is the best investment I have ever made. And then when you scratch, you know, you try to get them to talk more about their investments, they say, well, it's pretty much the only investment I ever made, except for that penny stock my brother-in-law, the ex-stockbroker, conned me into buying, but stuff is worthless now. And those gold coins I bought way back when the first Gulf War started, back in 1991. What'd I do with those things anyway? Bottom line, in my humble opinion, a house is a home first and investment second. But what about San Diego, huh? Well, yeah, it's in San Diego. Prices in San Diego have gone down in the past. They will go down sometime in the future, maybe sooner than we thought. Even though prices were, I don't know if they still, I think they still are, currently skyrocketing. But if you plan on staying here, by all means, buy whatever you can afford. San Ysidro, National City are two of the best values in the region. And people say, you would live in National City? I say, oh, it's a very dangerous area. They have houses and shopping centers and cars and kids. And it's yeah, really dangerous. Imperial Beach is a great beach value, but there's no great beach value these days. It's not a secret that California has a housing supply and demand imbalance. Hopefully, we will start to see the benefits of anti-NIMBYism, not in my backyardism, because we've got to build. We have no choice. We have to do it. You know, it's very difficult now to get consensus on anything because people are much entrenched in their way of thinking. But in my humble opinion, this is one of the most important things that we as a state are facing. And we have to, you know, break through this idea. You hear people say in San Diego, those of you who are listening outside San Diego, we don't want to be like Miami with these huge buildings right on the beach. No, we don't have to be like Miami. We can build throughout the city without having to wall off the ocean. And one of the things that in Sacramento, at the state's capital, they did that is still reverberating around the city, around the state, is they've made it so that any single family residence can be turned into 2 to 4 units. And the local authorities, the local county and city and borough authorities it's a hard time saying no. They have a hard time saying no. They're going to try. Obviously, some of the more wealthy places are trying really hard. And this is going to really change things. It's going to change the nature of the suburbs, but it's going to take, you know, several years. And we don't have too much time. We've got to get to work now. So I don't know if you've followed the tiny home movement. Some of these places are really pretty nice. They're small. You're good for 1 or 2 people, not for a family. But hopefully, we're going to get a handle on this because a very strong economy is a blessing and a curse. And that's what we have here in California, the world's fifth largest economy in one state. And we have a tremendous wealth, and we have tremendous poverty. Slide number 12. This is what I saw. Remember, I'm old, folks. I saw this back in 1993, up in North County. Because in the 1980s, there was this real estate bubble that burst in around 1990, 91. Please, God, let there be another real estate boom, and I promise I won't piss it all away this time. You think she did it in 2005 and 2006? Do you think she pissed it all away? And then again, now she's pissing it away now. Let's hope not. The perfect investment. This is what people were telling me in the mid-2000s. Come on, Piano, admit it. Real estate is the perfect investment. Look at what happened in the past 5 years. And I had a student who said, well, my real estate instructor said that real estate's never gone down in San Diego. And I said, what? How old are they? Because it went down in 1990. Beware the permanent trend. Remember Andrew Tobias's sage advice. There's no such thing as a permanent trend. It's like straight curve or jumbo shrimp. Real estate goes up and down in cycles, and ask those who bought in 1990 and then sold in 94. Real estate went down about 25% then. Ask those who bought that flipper condo in 2006 and lost everything when they went through foreclosure. Real estate went down 50, 60, 70%, depending on where you were, in the 2008 and 2009 debacle. And by the way, I'm sorry, if you plan to hold for the long term here in San Diego, you should do well. It's not as though San Diego is becoming less desirable. Have you ever lived through a winter in Buffalo, New York or Youngstown, Ohio? People want the climate that we have and the lifestyle we have. By the way, I hope what you've seen throughout the semester that there is no perfect investment. Every investment has advantages. Every investment has disadvantages. We have to keep our eyes open and understand that, you know, things are not perfect. We're humans. We're not perfect. Folks were saying the same thing, perfect investment back in 1999 about stocks, and now they're saying the same things about kleptocurrencies and NFTs. Oh my God, quick, you got to get in now, though. That Bitcoin's going to be $1 million someday. Yeah, so will a loaf of bread, you know. But not anytime soon. Slide 14. But what about leverage, huh? What about the ability to make money with other people's money? Well, we've already discussed leverage, haven't we? Yes, we have, and I've acknowledged that. Isn't that what makes real estate such a great investment? Yes, yes, but there are pitfalls. Just as with buying stock on margin, leveraging real estate magnifies your gains and magnifies your losses. Now, we have a worksheet that we would stop and do in the face-to-face class, but we're going to put it into the slides here, and here it is. This is an actual, I stole it from the financial planning book circa 2004. So look, textbook authors are just as liable to be caught up in a mania as just as anybody else, even textbook authors who write about finance. So these two were actual problems out of the book that we used in 2004. Calculating the return on investment. Dave, good old Dave, right? Dave, he didn't use silly names like I do. Bought a rental property for $200,000 cash. And 1 year later, he sold it for $240,000. So what's the return on his $200,000 investment? Well, that's, you know, return is easy to calculate. We take your absolute dollar return to $240,000 selling price minus the $200,000. And that's the $40,000 absolute return. But then we want to look at it as a percentage. The $40,000 that we received divided by our $200,000 investment gives us 0.2 or 20% return on investment. It costs us $200,000 to make $40,000. But it's just not typical. Well, now it more is, but not from you and I, not from you and me, but from these private equity groups like Blackstone, who are coming in with millions of dollars and buying up properties like crazy. But let's say Dave did what most people did back in 2002, 3, 4, 5, 6, and then it all fell apart. He invested only $20,000 of his own money and borrowed $180,000. So this is 90% financing. By the way, this is not allowed anymore. You have to have at least 25% down, 75% financing. So he did the same thing. He bought that condo for $200,000, but this time only brought $20,000 to the table. You hear people say that. How much money did you bring to the table? He only brought $20,000 to the transaction. So the same absolute dollar return, $240,000 minus $200,000, gives us a $40,000 absolute dollar return. We divide that dollar return by the initial investment, by the $20,000 that Dave brought to the table, and we get 200%. It only costs us $20,000 to make $40,000. And this is what was going on in 2004, 5, 6, and into 2007. People were putting a down payment on a condo that wasn't even built yet. It was in the process of being built. And 6 months later, when the condo was ready to be inhabited, they were able to sell it for $30,000 or $40,000 more. So quick, they're giving away free money. Go, run. You get some. And as J.P. Morgan said, right, there's nothing more dangerous to your financial well-being than the prospect of seeing your neighbor become rich. And that guy's an idiot. I can't believe he's making this much money. So me some too. Okay, well, here is the problem that they conveniently left out of the textbook. Calculating the return on investment using financial leverage, and things do not go as planned. Suppose Dave invested only $20,000 of his own money, borrowed $180,000, 90% financing, and the property value went down 20%. Now the question is, what is he going to tell his wife? So he saw his value of his property go from $200,000 down to $160,000. But wait a minute, he owes $180,000. He is underwater, negative equity. Honey, we have a problem. Remember that $20,000 that I used to buy this property? Well, that's gone. And now we owe another $20,000 before the bank will let us sell the property. He's underwater. If he got into trouble, he would walk away from the property, or allow it to go into foreclosure, which is what a lot of people did in 2008, 9, 10, and 11, into 2012. Or he might go to the bank and say, I got a problem, I can't make the payments. And this buyer says that they will pay $160,000. And the bank's going to make sure that that's a bona fide offer. There's a reasonable person who will put that money down, and that's about all they're going to get. Will you let me sell it? And so the bank would facilitate what's called a short sale. They would accept $160,000 and allow the property to change hands. Now, during typical times, Dave would then get a 1099 for $20,000 because the IRS says a forgiven loan is income. He would have to pay taxes on $20,000 that he ouch, talk about kicking a guy when he's down. Fortunately, the Congress waived that provision of the tax code until what, 2013, until the end of 2012. So many people, it's in the rearview mirror 12 years ago, 13, 14 years ago. But it was ugly. It was very ugly. And you could just wave a stick and see all these places that were in foreclosure in Chula Vista, one of the ground zeros for this. So let's see an example of the carnage. Let's see an example of what happened. So we're going to run over to a website called Zillow. And you may have played with this website before. It's not the best website in that real estate prices are, you can say that's how much the house is worth or whatever, but when it actually comes to trying to sell it, you're going to see what kind of bids you get. And that's exactly what happens with these estimates. They call them Z estimates or Zestimates or whatever. So I'm going to use a house that I've used for many years in the financial planning and money management class. And that's over by Palomar Street trolley station and near Interstate I-5. And folks, if you're not in San Diego, you don't know what I'm talking about, but that's okay. This place, please don't go knocking on their doors and say, do you know Mr. Piano uses this house for educational purposes? Okay, don't do that. But this is just one of hundreds of of places I was looking at during the carnage of 2008, 2009, 2010, 2011, and then 2012. And so what we're going to do is we're going to take a look at what the value they believe. They believe it's worth about $811,000. Now, again, once you try to sell it, if you were the owner, you're going to see what kind of bids you get, and then it'll be the real real amount of what it's worth. But they're using, you know, publicly available information that they're coming up with their own estimate. But what I want to show you is the history. Okay, let's come down. Where do we come down here? Comparative value, owner opposites, VFX and features. So it was built in 1959. And here it is. It last sold in 2010 for $225,000. Now think about that, folks. Between 2010 and now, it's gone up to over $800,000? I don't know. But a few months before this, it sold for $197,000. Well, that's not right. That's not really what it sold for. That's when it went for through foreclosure. So that's the value that the bank or the whoever was in charge of trying to liquidate the property, that's what they said it was worth. But then a few months later, when they actually got it on the market, it sold for $225,000. But look at what it sold for just 3 years before 2010, February, when it actually sold again to somebody who now probably still lives in it. February of 2007, $570,000. Yeah, it went from $570,000 down to $225,000. Ouch. So let's and before that, it sold in 1999 for $169,000, and that's as far back as they go. So in 8 years, between 1999 and 2007, it went up from 169 to 570. And this is what was going on. 20% a year. We very rarely see real estate prices 20, 30% a year. And when you do, that's when people can go, ooh, I want to get rich. Buy the place before it's even built, a condo before it's even built, and sell it in 9 months when it's actually ready to live in to somebody else for $30,000-$40,000 more. And so this person really, they bought right at the top. They used to have a graph that showed you the trajectory, and they bought right at the top as it was peaking, and then it was just a solid slope down. And so let's say they put $70,000 down. Okay, we don't know. We could go to the it's public record. We could go see what they put down, and we can go see the person's name. If it's a trust or some other entity that tries to hide the person's name, you have to do some what's called forensic accounting to find out who it really is. But let's say they put $70,000 down. Now they got a loan for $500,000. Yeah. Well, 3 years later, they're in deep trouble. Not even. Less than 3 years later, they're in deep trouble. They probably did one of those optional adjustable rate mortgages where the payment gets higher every year until finally they couldn't make the payments anymore, and they either walked away or went through foreclosure. And so think about what happened. They lost their entire $70,000 down payment, which is why we say real estate is tricky, right? And the bank now has a loan for $500,000. If it was one of those adjustable optional arms, it could be more because the loans weren't going down, they were going up. So now the bank has a property that's nowhere near worth $500,000. They took $275,000 loss. And that's why Mr. Ben Bernanke said, I held my nose and I wrote the check because the banks were in dire straits. Are you with me? You understand? Yeah, it was ugly. And this is just one of hundreds and hundreds of places in Chula Vista around the nation. There were thousands. And that's why we were looking at the abyss. So play with Zillow. There's another one called Trulia. I think they're the same company. And, the real estate agents just hate these things. But Zillow is trying to make money advertising. And see, you show your interest in a certain area, and they'll send you ads for real estate agents and other real estate services. So check it out if you're so inclined. And this actually I don't really like because one of the cool things about real estate that was that's a problem with stocks is that people are always checking the value of their stocks. You know, they say they're in it for the long term, but then they're running to their phone or whatever, the computer, to see, oh, it's gone down 25 cents. What should I do? And you couldn't do that with real estate. You know, you could look around and see what other places are selling for. But now with Zillow and Trulio and I think Redfin, you can do it, which gives people more reason to get all upset. And possibly panic when they shouldn't. So let's continue. Taxes. Okay, we got to talk about taxes. Wait a minute, Payona. Did you say there are no capital gains taxes on real estate? Yeah, as the law stands, as long as your real estate is your primary residence for 2 out of the last 5 years, you pay no capital gains on the first $250,000 if you're single or $500,000 if you're married. So what does that mean? Say you bought a house for $200,000, a fixer-upper, you're a married couple. You live there for 2 years, you work on it, fix it up, and you now sell it for $700,000. That whole $500,000 capital gain is tax-free. Pretty amazing, right? Now, it has to be your principal residence. So there was a well-celebrated case where a couple, very well-off, had three different residences, and they basically lived in all three. Moved around from, I think, Wisconsin, Arizona, Florida. And when they went to sell one of their places, they said, well, that's our principal residence. And the IRS said, no, it's not. You don't have one. You didn't follow the rules. There's some questions that they ask you on their website to see if it's your principal resident. In other words, they voted in one place. They had their driver's license in another place. And so you have to be careful. Oh, by the way, capital losses on your primary residence are not tax deductible. So remember that. But that's a very, very cool thing about your primary residence. And there are some people who do this, you know. Not so much in San Diego because it's just so difficult, but in other areas of the country, you know, they're handy with plumbing and electrical and floors and doors and whatever. And so they buy a fixer-upper, live in it for 2 years, sell it, capital gains tax-free. Now, speaking of infomercials? Have you seen the ads? Start your real estate empire with no money down. You too can take advantage of the tremendous opportunities now in the wide open real estate foreclosure market. Just buy our surefire guaranteed real estate investment kit for $395, or better yet, come to our two-day seminar for only $2,995 guaranteed. But when that doesn't work, we'll sell you the superlative, only very top secret 5-day, we'll send you to Kauai, and it's $9,995. And don't worry, friends, about burning your credit card, because you're going to pay off that credit card and all your other credit cards with wealth. You just can't think I can make a lot of money if I didn't have any ethics. Folks, I've seen these people. They are sharks, and they are very good at what they do. One of my ex-clients, this was about stocks, but the same idea, asked me to come to this seminar. And it wasn't a seminar. It was just a 2-hour pitch to sign up for their 3-day, I think it was $3,000. And they didn't even give you a chance to ask questions. As they were going along, they finally said, well, you know, people are in the back of the room to take your information. And the guy kept talking. I just tried to get a message. He goes, oh, no, we're not taking messages right now, sir. And they never did take messages. And I told her, I said, these people are crooks. They're absolutely crooks. But hey, they're out there, so be careful. There's a guy on the link on the website who was some, you know, reality show king or something like that. He wants to sell you a 2-week for $34,000. Sure-fired way to make money in real estate. Can't guarantee. First of all, if you knew about how to make riches beyond your wildest dreams, would you show somebody else how to do it? Yeah, right. And it's in the medical community too, folks. You know, this cures hoarseness. It's a wonderful W.C. Fields scam but it's just still happening. It cures cancer, right? It cures baldness or whatever. If it's too good to be true, right? Slide number 19. Okay. My advice on real estate: buy a house, make it your home. After you've digested that purchase, then look for some rental property. but learn as much as you can from folks who are already doing it. Maybe even work for a property manager for a spell, or an escrow company, an appraiser, to get the feel for what you will need to be able to do if you want to get into the world of real estate. But let's say that you don't want all the headaches. You don't want to be a landlord. So you want to get involved in the real estate world without owning real estate problems. Properties, I'm sorry. Real estate properties. Yes, you can do it. No problem. Slide number 20, real estate investment trusts. Now, folks, these look like stocks. You can value them like stocks. You buy and sell them like stocks, but they are not stocks. They are trusts. And I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know why they use trusts for these things. But you can think of a REIT. And I love that name, isn't it? Great? REIT. You can think of a REIT as a mutual fund. But instead of investing in stocks and bonds, they invest in real estate. So, for example, the big one is commercial property. Now, there's others that have residential properties. But hotels, warehouses, office buildings, apartment buildings, and retail outlets, you know, Walmart, Home Depot, they don't usually own their property. No, they lease it. They go into a 50-year lease, and they let the real estate investment trust take care of the property. And their job is to make sure that, you know, the property's in good working order, and to rent out the ancillary properties, the other properties that are surround the shopping malls and the like. And so that's their job. They are a pass-through investment, similar to a mutual fund, and they must distribute 90% of their earnings to the shareholders, whereas a mutual fund has to distribute all of their earnings. A REIT has to do 90% of the earnings. Now, again, they look like dividends, but they're not dividends. They're called fees from operations. So they're taxed a little differently, but it looks like a stock. Shopping centers, office building, warehouses, apartment complexes. The fees typically range from 1% to 2% a year, and long-term results about 7 or 8% a year. So let's take a look at one that's actually based in San Diego. Come on, where's my... Here it is. Come on back. And now let's go to... Come on, sweetheart. Got to be nice to your computer. Let's go to Yahoo. And believe it or not, where is it? Where'd it go? Uh-oh. Where'd it go? This is not good. This is not... What happened to... Let's go... It's not coming up right. I guess because it's too small. Yeah, okay. Let's go to Google. Let's go to Google. Okay, there we go. Wasn't the best of day to was it? So I remember, oops. Yeah. I happen to know that the symbol is O. What, yeah, which is not the best symbol because you can confuse it with a zero. But it's called Realty Income Corporation, and it's one of the bigger ones. It's based here in San Diego, and it looks like a stock. Here it is. It actually did well today, $51.28. And you do all the things we looked at before, the stock, our market capitalization, price to earnings ratio, all that stuff. It's still there. Now, what is it paying us? Oh, that's why I'm not a very good with I don't usually use Google's. They don't show you exactly where the here it is. They are paying, where is it?
I'm looking for the dividends, the percent.
I'm not I don't usually use Google. Let's use MarketWatch. I'm going over really well, aren't I? I don't market watch. I don't usually use the screen this small. So let's see. Market watch. Okay. O for realty income. There it is. Okay. Where's the good stuff? Here it is. 6%. Oh, now that's a lot better. Just a little while ago, it was not doing very... I guess the market... Oh, yeah. It was selling for like $60 just a few months ago. I haven't seen it in a while. It's a pretty big company, almost $44 billion. But now it's paying a lot better yield. When I look at REITs, I want them to be at least paying 6, 7, 8%. And for several years, they were paying 3, 4, 5%. Well, bonds were paying 2%, so I guess that makes sense. But they pay a pretty good dividend. 6% is not bad. And
they're not alone. There are other, let's see if they have this one. What are companies like? Competitors. Kimco, and another one, Simon Property Group is another big one. NNN. Here's an interesting company. You ever thought who owns those 7-Eleven stores? It's not 7-Eleven. It's companies like REITs, not companies, real estate investment trusts, like NNN, that owns a lot of the 7-Eleven sites. But let's take a look at Kimco. Let's see what they're paying. Bum, ba, da, bum. Yeah, 5.5. It's getting better. Yeah, REITs were, for several years, were not paying very good dividends, in my humble opinions. And what's Simon Properties? SPG, right? Does that remember? Let's see if I can remember it right. SPG. Simon Property Group. Yeah, there it is. Let's see what they're paying. 5.5. Yeah, now this is getting better. You know, I should start looking at REITs again, because I like dividends, and REITs pay, you know, assuming real estate doesn't fall into the porcelain oasis like it did in 2008, 9, and 10, where these companies had to, you know, cut their dividends, but they didn't go bankrupt. So that's REITs. Check them out. They look like stocks, and they're ways to invest in real estate. Now, the one final note, there's just not that many of them. You know, when you think of a mutual fund, you think of the ability to invest in hundreds or thousands of different stocks. But if you bought a mutual fund that was a sector-specific fund that invested in real estate, they're investing in real estate investment trusts, and there's just not that many of them. So you're going to be highly concentrated. That doesn't mean they won't do well. I think real estate should do well, especially the stuff that REITs invest in. Now, there's a lot of people who are saying, what about commercial office space? What about commercial office space? Because of all the work from home. Well, have you noticed there's a whole lot fewer work from home remote jobs available these days? The bosses want the employees back in the office. Okay, so that's our review. That's our discussion of real estate and real estate investment trusts. Remember, folks, real estate can be very profitable. But as we saw with the one person who bought that house at the height of the bubble, and then lost their entire down payment, and of course their credit was destroyed. They probably went through bankruptcy, or maybe they just walked away and went through foreclosure. And it can be a very big, very big nightmare too. And so also, if you don't want to be the landlord, you can do your stock due diligence, but this time look at real estate investment trusts. Okay, that's our discussion of real estate and real estate investment trusts. Now, in our next presentation, we'll take a look at brokerage firms and different types of accounts and thwack annuities. Ugh. Thank you so much for being in our class. Think of how much you have learned. We're almost at the end. It's so sad, but you are now official investment gurus, and you can speak with authority. Your friends and family members and your colleagues are all proud of you, and you are a tremendous resource for them. You can't let them down, dear students. Be awesome.